You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello and welcome to Sri Lanka 99.94 Cricket Every Day. My name is Mark Machado from the Merrily End, and I'm joined as per usual by Estelle Vargas Devon from the Papere. Sri Lanka 99.94 is your new home for Sri Lanka content. Be dropping into your podcast feed on YouTube or the 99.94 app several times every week. So please do rate, review and subscribe. We love all your comments, so please do get in touch. Thanks for joining Cricket's conversation. On the show today, Estelle, we're talking about the Women's Super 4 Limited Overs Tournament. I think before we even crack on with what we learned from the tournament or any of the results of or any of that, I think I almost feel like we need to congratulate Sri Lanka cricket for getting some women's cricket on, right? Because for so long during the pandemic and immediately afterwards, we just didn't see them. But now we're playing quite prolifically. And we've got domestic tournament. Last week, the under-19 girls were in India. It seems to be heading roughly in a kind of in the right direction, right?
Yeah, I think a little bit of credit due. I think they've tried at least to get a couple of fixtures in for the girls, especially with the women's FTP announced for the next couple of years. So they will have a few series coming up. It was really good to see, to be honest, the under-19s getting some game time because they haven't played together at that level before. And the World Cup, of course, is coming up in January. So good to see. We will talk a little bit more about how effective the tournament is, I guess, later on in this episode of the podcast.
So the final was Team Reds versus Team Greys. I, for one, all love this whole calling teams after their colours. I mean, who needs the Super Kings? Who needs the Super Giants? Who needs the Knight Riders when you can just go for colours? It's something that Sri Lanka cricket is starting to do quite often now. The Reds won. What can you tell us a bit about the Red team and what you thought about their performance overall?
Yeah, Red's side was led by Neelakshi De Silva. So she had a really good tournament. She finished as the top run scorer. Overall, I think the two teams that came into the final were the kind of two top teams. So Greys was captained by Harshita Samaravikrama, vice captain of the national side. And both teams had kind of looked a class above the other two, the Blues and the... What was the other team? The Greens.
Greys.
No, the Greys and the Reds were in the final. So they had looked... they had looked better than the Blues and the Greens in the first round. Of course, a really, really short tournament. Each team played three games apiece and the finalists played four. So Team Reds, I think, on the back of some good batting performances in that final, we saw Neelakshi get runs, Prasadini Veerakodi. Also, Malsha Shehani, who personally I am very excited to see how she goes in the international arena in the future. She is considered more of a bowler, but seems to be someone who can, or who at least tries to score quickly, which is very, very rare in women's cricket in Sri Lanka at the moment. You don't get a lot of players who are looking to score at more than a run a ball. So, she also had done well in the final and was a bit of a low-scoring encounter. They ended up winning by 53 runs, bowling out the Greys for just 97. So Greys team will be disappointed with that performance because they had a couple of good batters in that lineup: Harshita Samaravikrama, Hansima Karunaratna, Kaushini Nuttyangana, all three who have been part of that national setup as well. But yeah, Reds look like the best team of the tournament.
Building an innings seems to be a bit of an issue for various Sri Lanka women's sides, say even for some of the men's sides as well. If you've seen any of the Afghanistan ODI, or at least definitely the first Afghanistan ODI, that this wasn't a particularly high-scoring tournament at all, was it? I think only four times we saw scores over 200, right?
Yeah, five times over 200 and none over 250. So in, this is one of the biggest issues Sri Lanka have had in the international arena over the last few years, right? And it was an issue, I think, that women's cricket did see maybe a decade ago or maybe 15 years ago, but the game has certainly moved on from that point. But Sri Lanka still kind of seemed to be lagging behind in that area. So I don't know, is it the pitches that are being prepared that aren't really fit enough for limited overs cricket? Is it the batter's intent? It's very difficult to say because none of these games are televised. So you do have to be at the venue to kind of see what's going on. But my gut instinct is that a lot of the tracks are not that conducive to big runs. So players struggle. And of course, you see a lot of the spinners dominating in all these domestic competitions. I think if you look at over the years, the 50-over competitions or the T20 competitions Sri Lanka cricket have organized, we haven't seen too many high-scoring games. And that's one big area where Sri Lanka, that affects Sri Lanka when they do go on to the international arena, because their batters don't know how to get those big totals on the board. Even when they do come across the better batting surfaces. And to be honest, this is why I am really, really worried about a franchise league, whether it's T20 or T10. We have a T10 tournament coming up next year. It really worries me because what you don't want is for players to go into competitions like that and be found out, you know, their style of play just be found out, because you don't want to see a T10 game where teams are scoring 50, 60 runs, right? That's not what you want. You want entertaining cricket, and nowadays entertaining cricket is boundaries, sixes. You want high scoring encounters, but we don't see that in domestic cricket in Sri Lanka. So that is one of my biggest worries when it comes to franchise cricket, because that in turn will lead people to say, look, who's going to buy this? It's a product, right? In end of the day, it's a product. And it's going to lead people to say, like, who wants to watch this kind of cricket? The odd low-scoring encounter is, of course, it's to me, it's interesting and exciting to watch. But when you've got games where players are batting at, you know, strike rates of 55, 60, thinking that top five run scorers list of the tournament, only Neelakshi De Silva was scoring at over 70, a strike rate of 70, which is, to me, just unacceptable in this era, right? In 2022, you should be at least at 80, I assume.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of the benchmark.
It's interesting because you brought the T10 up there, because the strike rates in the T10 are out of this world, right?
Yep, yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, when you watch the press conference that SLC had a few, It was the day after we'd actually recorded our last episode of Women's Cricket, which is why if you listen to that episode, it might have felt chronologically out of place. But one of the things that was implied was that they were going to try and bring over the best overseas and foreign talent. And that's going to have the impact that might have on the women's game in Sri Lanka could be exponential. And what hopefully some of our girls will learn is that they've got to hit the ball a bit harder and up their strike rate, right? Because Sri Lanka did very well in the Asia Cup when they played to get, you know, on low scoring Bangladeshi pitches. But outside of that, they've not had a huge amount of success the last few years. And, you know, one of the big reasons for that is, as I've already said, and, you know, we're discussing now, is an inability to put an innings together, right? And I suppose all these tournaments help, right? Because when we first started this podcast, in fact, when me and you first started talking about women's cricket in Sri Lanka, which was probably about a year ago, I think you came with the Murali end to talk about it. We talked about the lack of visibility of women's cricket. Actually, and you know, I started off making this point, we're playing a lot of women's cricket now in Sri Lanka, and the girls have got to at some stage start to pay that back and start improving. I'm sure they will. Like, it will happen. That it just needs more. They need more exposure to it. But I would have expected to see slightly or more frequent higher scores in this domestic tournament. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, let's talk about the wicket takers.
I don't just do this podcast. I also host Red Inca, which is a show that covers far more modern stories. We look at the trends within the game, tell stories about the modern great players, and look at what is really going on in global cricket. You can find Red Inca by searching for it in your podcast app or on YouTube or by downloading the 99.94 DM app.
So Estelle, I want to ask you which bowlers caught your eye. Who were the main wicket takers in this tournament? And you know, where do you think they might go from here?
Yeah, Inoka Ranavira topped the bowling charts for the tournament. I think she had 10 wickets in the four games that she played. And Nimasha Madhusani, which is a name that I have not heard before. In fact, I had to do a bit of digging to find out what kind of bowler she is. Can you take a guess?
Left-hand spin?
Yes, left-arm spin. So Inoka Ranavira is also a left-arm spinner.
Nimasha do you know Madhusani. If she's a finger spinner or wrist spinner?
Yeah,
I'm guessing finger. Yeah.
So Nimasha is pretty young. I think they're both on like opposite spectrums of their careers in terms of, Inoka Ranavira has been there for the last 15 years in international cricket. She is Sri Lanka's best spinner. She's the one who kind of carries that bowling attack, that spin bowling attack for Sri Lanka. So she it was not surprising to see her topping those bowling charts. Malsha Shehani, another one who I mentioned regarding her batting before, she's also amongst the top five. So that's also very interesting to see. She played a part in that Asia Cup campaign. Again, four spinners in the top five. So unlike the men's tournament, we have one pace bowler in the top five. So Tarika Sewandi, who is kind of the understudy to Udeshika Prabodhini in the Sri Lankan side. She has been around the Sri Lanka setup for a long time now, but hasn't really gotten that much game time because Sri Lanka do tend to go with that one pace bowling option in most of their games. So it was good to see her kind of amongst the wickets. She was also in Team Greys, Team Reds, so the winning side. In terms of, again, I think it's reflective of the conditions, isn't it? And you mentioned Bangladesh and Sri Lanka doing well in Bangladesh. Even if you look at the Bangladesh side, they have the same problem, not just the women, but the men as well. They play so much of their cricket on this tough surfaces that when they do get into like good batting surfaces, even they don't really know how to make the big runs. So Sri Lanka, it's good to see the bowlers doing well, but I think for the sake of selling the sport, selling the game in Sri Lanka, the women's game in Sri Lanka, you've got to have a lot more runs coming from the batters and a lot faster runs coming from the batters, because otherwise people do tend to lose a lot of interest. And like I mentioned before, they just can't be competitive when they go overseas.
Where were the games played and what do we know about the pitches? Because you said they weren't played on... they weren't broadcast on television. I mean, if you listen to this podcast regularly, you know I'm based in London. So all I know about these games is what I've seen of scorecards and what Estella's told me. There's no point me trying to even pretend that I've watched it because it's impossible. what do we know, if anything, about the state of the pitches that they would have played on?
Yeah, so they've been played in like the clubs in Colombo. So the final was played at the BRC grounds, but it's very hard to imagine that it was a good batting surface just looking at the scores. I could be wrong, because like you said, we weren't at the games, so there's only so much you can tell from the scorecards. But it is an issue that Sri Lanka cricket have had, or this women's competitions have had right throughout the years, where you're not getting those runs from the batters. You might have the occasional 50 or 60 coming off 60 deliveries, or, you know, like, I mean, the odd innings from someone like Chamariyathapattu, that is more than a runner ball. But the majority of knocks are coming at very, very slow pace. So maybe strike rates of 55, 60, 65, which just isn't good enough, because it might be getting the job done in this tournament, but, you know, it's not going to take you far in the international arena. And that's what we've seen, right? If you look, it's a no-brainer when Sri Lanka go into international cricket. It's the batters that have, the batting that has been the problem. So I won't say 100% of the blame is with the batters. It could be the surfaces as well, but I do think that more intent needs to be shown by the batters, because you see people like Marsha Shihani get, maybe she gets only 20 runs, but it's runner ball or more than a runner ball.
Shall we take another quick break? And when we come back, we'll talk about what's next for the women.
Hi, I'm Nikesh Raghani, commentator and host of the India on 99.94 podcast. Several times each week, my co-host Sara Waris and I will be bringing you the very best in Indian cricket chat, whether we're discussing the legend of Julan Goswami, KL Rahul's strike rate, the men's T20 death bowling woes, or the latest controversy involving the BCCI, we've got you covered. You can listen and subscribe via your usual podcast provider. Just search for India on 99.94. You can watch us via YouTube, and you can download the 99.94 app. If you love Indian cricket, then join our conversation.
Estelle, we should also mention that Chamariyathapattu was she was with the Melbourne Renegades, right?
Yeah.
She got picked up after they had a couple of injuries. She didn't have a particularly great time there, but I think in terms of, she might have had the time of her life, but in terms of her form, wasn't particularly great. But it's great to see her involved in these franchises around the world, right? And hopefully we'll get to see. I'd love to see her play in the 100 next summer, though. Actually, the time it should work out, I was going to say with the T10, maybe that's about the same time. But I think the women's 100 should be
in
August.
August, right?
Yeah, yeah. And the T10 is it June, July?
June,
which is interesting because it will mean they'll be competing with Major League Cricket, I think. It's hoping to be in roughly the same window. I haven't seen the exact dates. Talking about this T10, I know we've mentioned it a few times. Is there a lot of enthusiasm for T10, for the women's T10 in Sri Lanka at the moment? I mean, the Papare must be super excited, I imagine.
Yeah, I think for those who followed women's cricket, I think there's a bit of excitement because of the opportunities a tournament like that can bring. I know a lot of people were calling, including you, were calling for like a women's LPL, you know, that kind of tournament. But we've got it in the form of T10. I wouldn't say it's ideal. I wouldn't say T10 is ideal, but I do think it's maybe a step in the right direction. I think with the women's game, you have to look at it a little differently to the men's right now in terms of, you know, selling it, because that's the only way you're going to be able to sustain competitions going forward. So it's in terms of reaction here, I think overall it's a mixed reaction. You have the kind of, I won't say purists, but, you know, who are like, you know, T10 is, what is T10? It's like the Hong Kong Sixers, right? And then you have the other kind of fan base who follow the T10 leagues ongoing currently and see it as another form of cricket where you can be entertained. That I think is the main objective of the format, isn't it? It's just pure entertainment, Sixers, who is not much the bowlers can do. But a lot of people who've been following the women's game, I think, are happy for the players, myself included. I just think that whatever it is, it's a great opportunity for these girls to experience something at a different level, hopefully get to play with a few of the international players who've done well over the years for their respective teams. And also financially, it's a huge thing for these girls, right? Because they don't get paid like the men do. They don't have contracts. They do have contracts, but not contracts that pay them like the men's team gets paid. So this will be good for them, I think, overall. And the other thing is maybe looking at the T10, they are forced to kind of try to go faster because that's obviously a big problem, like I've said so many times before. So
I think from my perspective, right, all I want is Sri Lankans with the men. My aspirations for what I want for them is different, but with the women at the moment, I just want a consistently competitive Sri Lankans women's setup that is creating opportunities for women on the island. And I think the T10 is the first step towards that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's all about opportunity right now, right? You can't. I think the idea of Test cricket is done for women's cricket in Sri Lanka.
Yeah.
ODI cricket and T20 cricket are going to exist with the World Cups, so T10 will be a good opportunity for these players, especially because they don't have. A kind of a system where they get to play consistently, like even this tournament. Okay, my biggest criticism is, yeah, it's good that they're getting to play, but the tournament lasted 9 days. Each team played 3 games. What is your objective? Are you trying to achieve with this tournament? Because at the end of the day, it seems like just exercise to say, okay, we concluded this tournament. But is it really achieving what you want, particularly with the pitchers, the girls? Are they getting enough time out in the middle, you know? So something like the T10, I think, will bring a little more push in the right direction.
Estelle, let's leave it over there. Thank you for listening to Sri Lanka 99.94, where we speak cricket every day. Please do rate, review and subscribe. We love your comments. Please leave it for us. You can download the 99.94 app if you haven't already. You can follow us on Twitter. I'm at Mark Machado and Estelle is at Estelle_Vazu1, as in the number one. Never miss out. Join our 24/7 conversation on social media and follow us at 9994DM. Cricket every day.
Hey there, my name is Michael Laminato and this is Pit Pass F1, a brand new podcast that'll take you closer to the action of the world's most prestigious motorsport. From Monaco to Miami and Australia to Azerbaijan, Pit Pass F1 is on the ground and has you covered. Esteemed F1 journalists Julianne Serasoli and Chris Medland will take you inside the sport every round. They'll keep you up to date with the latest news breaking in Formula One and the most influential views shaping the world of Grand Prix racing. Every Friday, we'll be bringing you a track guide and race preview, and Chris and Drew will be in your feed every morning from Saturday through to Monday to keep you up to date on all the day's action on and off the track. So if you want to be in the know on the latest in Formula One, subscribe wherever you get your favourite podcasts and visit us at evergreenpodcasts.com. Pit Pass F1, a brand new show for Evergreen Podcasts.